I've forgotten exactly what we did cover and didn't cover, so forgive me if I either skip on the one hand or if I repeat on the other hand. We were just talking about the role of the Masada Kiddushin as the individual who was the ultimate responsibility, whether this marriage is permissible or forbidden. That seems to be obvious to me. That's the most important responsibility, not some of the other honorifics that go on. And we spoke a little bit, if I'm not mistaken, just correct me if I'm wrong, about the importance of seeing to it that the husband and the wife are both Jewish, either born Jewish or properly converted. I think we spoke about Isurei Kahuna. Did we speak about it last time? But now I have to talk about the worst case scenario, which is the case of Mamzerus, which of course makes things almost, you know, as it says in the Mishnah, Mu'uvas lo yuchaliskon. You can't fix it up. Oh, I'm sorry. So I'll be giving you a brief overview because the sources are not available to you yet directly. Talk about some of the major problems. Now, as you know, we pass from the halacha that mamzerus comes as a result of isurei arayos. So aside from incestuous relationships, which are very, very, very rare, even in today's crazy world, but the real problem is, of course, eshes ish. Eshes ish. Sounds like a cool Eishes Ish, how can that be? The answer is very simple. It happens all the time. When someone is married properly, properly means that there was a proper Jewish marriage, a halachic marriage, and they separate without a proper Jewish get, and then she marries somebody else. That's a recipe for disaster. Unfortunately, it happens too many times. And as a Rabbonim, you have to try to figure out at the end of the day, is this individual a mamzer or not a mamzer, which is a very sad thing. And we try, ironically, this whole shiur, this whole series about how to make a good kiddushin, we try to make it into a bad kiddushin. It's a bad kiddushin, then they were not married in the first place, and then there's no problem with mamzerus. So now we go the other way. How do you make a kiddushin into a bad kiddushin? So there are two ways. One is, there are no witnesses. Witnesses are very important. If there are no kosher witnesses, then they're not married. So That's the best way to go about it, but of course it leads to a whole arichas about Hilchas Eidus, some of which we'll get to a little bit later on, as we go into how to do it properly. But if the witnesses are not Shom HaShabbos, Rav Moshe is a tshuva, I'm just going to talk the Gadol, that if it's obvious they're not Shom HaShabbos, even though there was no formal testimony in the Bezin against them, they consider to be Posel Eidus. And the best way is to make sure there were no Shomer Shabbos at the event. And then, in Rav Moshe's mind, that if there's no proper Kiddushin, they're not married, notwithstanding the fact that they were married by a Reform rabbi or a conservative rabbi or the justice of the peace or any other way that they were considered themselves married, they're not halakhically married. That's Rav Moshe's psak. That's the accepted psak today. Rav Hankenzal was against it. He felt that if they viewed themselves as being married, even if it was only a civil marriage of this things of this nature, they considered halakhli married. And the general assumption is we try to do that, try to get it whenever we can. But push comes to shove, we rely on Rav Moshe and his whole group that they didn't mean to get married in a halakhic sense. They didn't keep Hilchos Nida, so you can't say the word about any Averis and many other considerations. We're going to assume for the moment that that's the case. That saves the day. There were those who were very upset from Moshe in the non-Orthodox camp. Rav Moshe is delegitimizing our marriages. They're the biggest favor in the world. If not for that, they wouldn't be able to get married to the members of our from community. Chalila v'chas. So Rav Moshe did him a big favor. He didn't go to the truth. He wasn't doing any favors to anybody. Moshe emes v'saros emes. So that's the psak halacha as we understand. Fine. What happens if there were kosher witnesses in the crowd? That's a problem. It's a problem. So, if it's an Orthodox rabbi, there's a chazaka that he's doing things right. We'll get to it in Siman Mem Beis. That's what this is discussed, the Pesachei Tshuva. Chasam Tshuva is Chasam Sofer. So then, we assume that the marriage is proper, even if the witnesses, the kosher witnesses are in the audience. It may depend if they're facing one way or the other way. This is what the research we do to find out, to try to get rid of marriages. Just yesterday, one of the chosher rabbanim here was discussing with me we should undo a marriage because it was done in the overseas, and the rabbi was known to be not a good guy, and he wasn't careful, and some say he was himself a Mechalal Shabbos, and we're trying to maybe try to undo the marriage, because this woman is an aguna for so many years afterwards. So there are times in which case we look to see if it's a non-Orthodox marriage or a marriage done by someone who's technically Orthodox, but is a Mechalal Shabbos, or is a charlatan, as he doesn't know what he's doing. We try very hard to undo these marriages, either to help an aguna, which is not our topic, or, as often happens a generation later, to solve a mamzeris problem. Okay. There are also cases which we could undo a marriage based on this principle of Kiddushei Tos. Now, Kiddushei Tos, according to Rav Henke, doesn't exist. Nowhere in Shas, he knew Shas by heart, nowhere in Shas does it say if a woman married a man and he had a certain blemish, and at the end of the day, the blemish, she didn't know about it before she married him, and she found out about it, she walked away. Now remember, in the olden days, it was just Kiddushin before this, it was done through a shliach. Right? You don't even see each other long before FaceTime. So there was a tremendous, she was fooled completely. So Rav Henkin properly quotes, if you look in Kuf Nun Dalet and Evanazi, you'll see there was a case of a Kiddushin, and the man had no sight, he was blind. And she didn't know about it. There's a whole pilpul in Kufnun Dalet. You force him to give a get. What get? The Kiddushei Tos. He says, no, it's not Kiddushei Tos. You see, it says no such thing as Kiddushei Tos. And Rav Moshe argues strongly that there is such a thing as Kiddushei Tos based on various Gemaras that I'm going to go into right now. He has four cases of Kiddushei Tos. It's important that we know this because in case you have to inquire about these things. Number one, it's a case of someone who's impotent, hakol yodim kalam nechzal chupa, so therefore that marriage could be nullified. Number two, if he was psychotic in a psych hospital, and in this particular case, Rav Moshe Paskin in the 1940s, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank Paskin the same way in the same case. You know, the same ferry point, the same mental hospital of the U.S. Navy, so it has to be the same case. They both said she didn't know. It was hidden from her. And of course, he relapsed. He got a little bit better. They got married. And then he went right back to his psychosis. Probably couldn't even give a get. Depends on the circumstances. That was case number two. Case number three, he was in the church. In the church. Believe it or not, he was in the church. And he was a con man. So he figured he'll marry a woman. And then she didn't need a get from him because he's in the church. So he'll be able to make a few dollars. Or many dollars. So Moshe writes, he didn't know he was in the church, so no one wanted to marry someone in the church. Okay. Number four, which is of course the most problematic, is a case in which he is homosexual, that you can't talk about today's world. Yes.
Sorry, the case in the church, he's Jewish.
Yeah, of course. If he's not Jewish, he's not married.
So he's like undercut, like he.
Converted. He was a Jewish guy. He converted to Christianity or somebody. Yeah. Homosexuality. Much of the truth about that too. It's a pilpul, you have to be careful with the Lashonis these days. Is it a shtus? Is it a rishus? Is it back and forth? In any event, if he was active in that area of Moshe Paskin, no one would ever want to marry such a man, and therefore it's Kiddushei Tos. Those are Moshe's four cases. Unfortunately, there are cases in which people have extended Rav Moshe's tshuvas beyond recognition. How do you define someone who has a mental illness serious enough that no one want to marry this individual? It's obvious that they wouldn't want to marry him, etc., etc. There were those who go further than that, beyond Rav Moshe, they say. This was a Beis Din, which was established, I think, 20 years ago by a certain rabbi, in which he said that, you know, if a man, for example, hits his wife, so it's obvious, we now know it's obvious retrospectively, that he was a violent person. We found out that he was violent in the gym, he used to bang people around the basketball court, and now he's banging his wife. Obviously, if she would have known that he was violent, and he's obviously was violent, so if that's the case, probably none of us is married in this room, because they can always find some shortcoming that the wife didn't know about, that maybe we didn't know about. Ella Devasov, no one is perfect in this world. And that's considered to be a not accepted process, even though unfortunately there's some people who walk around with that kind of a leniency, which the mainstream Rabbanim say is it has no basis. You can't just find a little small thing and say that had she known. Remember, it's Bechira Chavshis. Even if he was and had a violent streak, and he exhibited it in his teen years, so he had a violent streak, okay. But it's Bechira Chavshis, you can choose. And if you can choose to treat your wife with dignity and respect, as everyone's required to do, so what? There's certain midrash that Moshe Rabbeinu had certain streaks that were not perfect when he was born, he overcame them. So, I mean, we can't condemn everybody who's supposed that's one of these kind of streaks, quote unquote. That's unfortunate. There's a recent unfortunate case where there was some individual who some people said that he was there was a mental illness to the extent that she never would have married him. I thought that was incorrect, even though some big names were attached to that decision. It was wrong. And it's a problem. It's a major problem. We have to be very careful not to overextend this Kiddush Etos beyond the cases in which it belongs. And this is a very serious issue. Very serious. Yes, sir?
And these cases that Moshe was talking about, only if it happens to the man?
No, if it happens to the woman, if the woman has a problem and the man wants to take Kiddush Etos, there's Mokar and Shas for that. So that, you know, that's true too, but it's less of a problem in the long run, so I'm not going to discuss it. It's, of course it's true, but it's less of a problem. Yes?
All these things, he has to have had the problem before they got married also.
Correct. It comes afterwards, but for sure it's not Kiddush Etos. It was a sad case, I don't want to talk about it too much, just very briefly, where, again, the husband wanted a lot of money for a get, and it turned out that the woman found out, the details we can't go into now, that there was a certain homosexual tendencies that he had in his teen years, which people vouched for subsequently, but there was no proof that he was actively in that area until after the marriage. Then they had proof, pictures in the works. So that depends upon a very fundamental question, which is, you know, you can't even talk about it these days. The fact that a certain person has a certain tendency, does that mean that you can say definitively now, not later, but now, that he can never establish a normal relationship with his wife? If he can never do that, then you can start talking about a possibility of Kiddush Etos, even though there's not physical impotence, but there's no way of getting around that obstacle. Of course, that's a big machlokes in the professional world, so I'm not going to right now. Suffice to say, I tried that trick to help a woman, but it didn't work. The Rabbanim felt that there's insufficient evidence to that premise, even though many mental health professionals, they buy into it. They had to spend a six-figure sum for a get. It was another celebrated case where they wanted to undo the marriage on the grounds that the individual was promiscuous, both before and after the marriage. And even though promiscuity was never a grounds for undoing a marriage completely beforehand, is a new wrinkle. It's called AIDS. Maybe he has AIDS. No. AIDS from woman to man is not as common as the other way around. And the tshuva was written to be matirit, and the tshuva was written later to rescind the heter on the grounds that the guy walked in and he was tested. He didn't have AIDS. And if he had AIDS, I had a meeting in my shul, he's back with my specialist in infectious diseases with two chashev rabbanim, and he says he's dealing with people all the time who have AIDS, and they stay together, whether they're using condoms or pills or whatever they're using. This cost a seven-figure sum. And the first number was not one. So that was a churban. But anyway, you can't undo marriages so easily. Okay, I'll just give you a brief overview that don't jump to undo marriages, even though we have to sometimes do it in limited cases. Fine. But now we tackle a thornier problem, which is, okay, if you have, you know, you have all the facts that are well known, it's all established, you're going to figure out what happened in a certain case. Now, there are rumors floating that there's some kind of a problem somewhere. Do we check out the rumors, or we just you know, let sleeping dogs lie and just let it be.
Can I just,
yeah.
if we accept, assuming like Rav Moshe,
yeah,
a secular marriage, if there are no kosher witnesses,
right,
then they go afterwards.
Right.
The marriage continues not to have validity. But let me recommend, for which is a common situation now, people who got married when they weren't religious now become religious. Should they kind of?
Excellent question. Every shul has balei tshuva who got married when they were not Orthodox, and then now they're full members of the community. Are they married? If you ask me, they're likely married. Rav Moshe's case, don't discuss that. Rav Moshe's case, where they never were religious, never. If they became religious, it's more likely, again, I wouldn't say for sure not, but it's more likely that they learned something about these things, and therefore to say that they continue to live in sin when they understood that non-Orthodox doesn't cut it is not so likely. And I think they probably had in mind that they should be considered to be married, right? And they lived an Orthodox lifestyle. She went to the mikveh, I mean, the whole thing, everything. So we can't just, here, we don't have any, to my knowledge, or Moshe never passed in a case like that, that they're not married, to my knowledge. There was a very sordid case where a certain other rabbi said that. Very, very sad case. I mean, it was an individual who, it was terrible. There were two couples in the community, and whatever, one's wife, and when ended up going with the other guys, wanted to marry the husband of the other. It was a very bad case. And they went, and to make it worse, it caused a divorce, and the guy wanted to marry, but the guy was a kohen. They went to a certain rabbi who said, look, when they got married, they weren't from. So therefore, the marriage is no marriage, and the get is no get, and the kohen could marry. It stinks. I don't even think it's true, but even if it is true, that, what kind of psak is that? So that happened in my memory. Very sad. Anyway, all these things happen. I'm not looking for trouble.
What if a couple, which I've been asked a number of times, wants to renew?
Good. They should get two eidim. Should give her a ring again in front of two eidim. Write a nuksuba. That'll be the best thing to do.
You don't think that's moitzi laz and what took place beforehand? I mean, does that imply until now it's been?
Look, we look when that's the thing when they were married in a totally secular place by either reformed conservative rabbi or by the justice of the peace. So we have to assume Moshe is right. Otherwise, we're in deep trouble. So at that time, they weren't married. They have to have gotten married at some later point. So you come to me now, why did you come to me last week? I can't worry about that. I have to do what's right for them, right? Although I do think that it's very possible they're married precisely because they're living in a different community for all those years. But to play it safe, play it safe. Yeah. They have to write a new ksuba anyway, because the ksuba was possible, because who knows, a conservative, they maybe didn't have a ksuba. So what's the ksuba? Just give a ring in front of two witnesses. I think the laws is not so big, it just kept quiet, no one wants to know about it. Okay?
Yeah.
What? No, bracha, no. You know, brachas are not makas. Which one is it? Yes, sir. Sorry.
The rabbi said Rav Moshe was doing the reform and conservative rabbis a favor.
Not the rabbis a favor, he did the congregants a favor.
Okay. So would Rabbi ever recommend if you're marrying off a non-religious couple that you should do something that makes them not actually
so married? There are stories going around that in Eretz Yisrael, the rabbonim, if they see a promiscuous community and they have to get married by state law, state law, by the rabbi, they undo the wedding, somehow or other. How do they do that? They make non-kosher, whatever they do, whatever shtick they do, because they're afraid that they're going to get married halachically, and then they're going to have boyfriends while they're married, or just not have to get there later on. I wonder what they're afraid about. I tell people, if there's a, you're asked to perform a wedding for a non-from couple, don't do it unless you have a strong, ongoing connection with a member of the family who will inform you that in case they get divorced, they should have an Orthodox Jewish get. Otherwise, you're not doing anyone any favors. You're going to marry them off, and you'll do it right, okay? Two kosher witnesses, it works, your name will be signed, everything's great. And then they'll separate, they're not from, no kidding, people from the street. People are calling from the street, I want you to marry me. I say, no, I don't know who you are. I'll marry them, they'll be properly married, they'll separate, I've never seen them in the rest of my life. They'll separate without a get, and they're going to be my mazarim because of what I did. Rabbi, if you won't do it, we're going to go to the reform rabbi. Great. Right, you know, because this is spoken about in one of the old magazines a few 20 years ago. if you have a connection with them, so you know the father. The father's a member of your shul. And the kid's not from. Then you can do it. Because you tell the father, listen, you better make sure if this doesn't go right, you have to make sure it's going to be a get. Okay. That's a different story. Okay, I hope that answered your question. Okay. So now, what about situations in which you're not exactly sure what's happening? This is sometimes, once I had a case, a rabbi came to me and told me that there's a rumor going around that, they're not talking about, this happened maybe 10, 15 years ago, that a certain family, by now, it's already in the 21st century, that their grandmother was married before the war, and then she remarried and her husband surfaced. Rumor. What do you do with that? The rumor. What is true? Oh, about. If it's true, if all the facts were true 100% in front of us, it's an unspeakable tragedy. Right? By now there could be 50 mamzer running around. But am I required to inquire? So I went to Abzam Nechemia. This is a way above me. What do I do in this case? He said, Let it go. So that's the question is, the rabbi should be careful not to make things worse. So there are two gemaras I want to, the sources, we'll just talk about Bekitz and Nimritz. There are two sources in Masechta Kiddushin. I brought a gemara with me, and you'll get the source, you'll see them. And the question is the relationship between these two sources. It's a big, big machlekes, Gedolei HaPoskim. Fascinating machlekes. One source tells us, Masechta Kiddushin, a remarkable line in the Gemara. The Gemara is like this: Kesed Matam Amzerim, Mishpacha Shenitma Nitma. If it's already, it's already Nitma. It's assimilated. It's already. It's hard to translate the word Nitma. I'm talking now here than I am. Nitma Ben Akam. They use expression. He just got swallowed up. At the end of the day, Eliyahu is not going to be Megalit when Eliyahu Novi comes. Just let it be. That's one Gemara. And if Ayin Aleph from an Aleph Masechta Kiddushin. There's another Gemara. Two Dapim later. Eliyahu Mamzer, Mamzer Vadihud, Eliyahu Homamzer Sofek Yovo. Questions, what if any is the relationship between these two Gemaras? And this is a whole Shia talk. You haven't said the sources. So I'll just talk briefly. There are two ways to discuss this. One way is to say that these two are in fact related. That the whole concept of Mishpacha Shenitma Nitma is based on the principle of Mamza Vadev Lo Mamza Safek. So, if you to say it nicely, what you won't know won't hurt you. That's all it is. There's no din of Nitma as such. If it's Nitma, you don't know. And if you don't know, it's okay. Lav Davka Nitma. The other way to say is no, the unrelated concepts. Mam Zavad, Mam Zasavik is one case. Mishpacha Shenitma Nitma is a totally different concept. The concept means that we don't even, as a family, and within that family, there's rumors that somebody in the family that has a yichutz problem, not the whole family. So then there's a rule, some new halacha, brand new halacha, that in such a circumstance, we're able to just let it be, because Eliyahu Novi is going to come at the end of the day. He's not going to be Megalit, so just sort of forget about it. But how do you explain that? How did the Osa become Mutu? If it's Vadev Lo Sofek, understand, because there is a Kosef. But if it's Nu Aloch, Nitma Nitma, and it extends beyond Mamzeris, it can extend to what we call Chalolim. And that was last week's, right? Chalolim, Isurei Kehuna. There's no Xeris Kosef Cholol Vadev Lo Cholol Sofek that we know about. So it extends, many posts will say it extends to Chalolim as well, as all you don't have these sources. But such a sheet exists. So there's a brand new din called Nitma, since Eliyahu is not going to be Megalit, so we're not going to be Megalit either. That's some kind of new din. But Nafka Minas, you understand Lakan or Lakan. to talk about contemporaries who fought it out, I don't mean today's contemporaries, the contemporaries of the 20th century contemporaries who fought this one out, I'll quote two famous Gedolei Olam Mamash. One is Rabbi Chanan, the Kovetz Shira. He says that Mamza Vadeh Lo Mamza Safek is like Orla Vadeh B'chutzaratz Vadeh V'lo Safek, another Gemara in Kiddushin. And the simple read of the Gemara Masechta Kiddushin, which discusses Orla B'chutzaratz Vadeh V'lo Safek, Daf Lamed Tesem and Aleph, the Gemara says, he says, Sapek Li V'ani Echol. Rashi explains, L'kot Shelo B'fanei She'a Safek Etzli V'ana Echol V'Orla Koi. So it's a contrived case where you won't know. Say, someone, you pick the fruit off the tree, don't tell me, and I can eat it. You let it close your eyes. This also goes against our grain so much. But that's Loch Lanosh Sinai, that in Chutzarts, Vaday is Asr and Safik is Mutter. See, I'm not required to be Mevar. Close my eyes. Rabbi Chanan, based on Rishonim, says that Mamza Vaday is the same thing. And he says, I know someone is a Mamzer, but no one else in the world knows. It'll never be discovered. I can make a shidduch between this boy and a wonderfully Jewish, nice Jewish girl. It's printed in the Kovetz Shira. Wow. There's nothing to do with Nitma. There's not Nitma over here. It's unknown. It's very much known. Oh, but only I know it. No one else know it. No one else. Wow. That's his approach to things. In which case, the idea of Ditma is not really relevant as a new din. It may be connected. Ditma, because you don't know, so therefore it's fundamentally relying upon Mamza Vala, Mamza Safik, but it can extend even to a situation where it's not Ditma. And the Chazon Ish is the one who disagrees. Chazon Ish says no. Chazon Ish says, Mishpocha Shnitma Nitma is a new din. It's nothing to do with Mamza Vada, Mamza Safik. It applies to Chalolim too, where there's no Gzeres HaKosuf. Nitma is one din. Mamza Vada, Mamza Safik means that nobody knows. If you know, Chas V'Shalom, you should let some guy marry him. Nobody knows. But if I know, I'm required to tell him. Safik means no one knows. Right now, nobody knows. So this is the machlokes between the Gedolei Poskim. I mean, you get your sources, you'll see some of the back and forth about this discussion. It's very difficult to know who's right. Who am I to say who's right? And for those who want to go into the lovemas, I can put a little bit, maybe on some of the sources. This goes to the very thorny question. Is Mamza Vadeh or Mamza Safek a local din by Mamza? Or is this a paradigm, according to the Rambam, for Sfeika de Rabbanon, which is Lekula Midoraisa? When we say Sfeika Raisa Lekula, we only mean on the level of the Rabbanon. On the level of the Raisa, Sfeika de Raisa is in fact Lekula. That's what the Rashba quotes from the Tshuvas HaRambam. No one could find it. All the latest from are assuming not that way. The Shmait says, Pilpulim and the rules. It was a wedding Mamza Vadeh for. What's the difference? But they found the Rambam. They found the Rambam. It's an Arabic Tshuva. They found the Rambam. And it's recently been translated. And he really says it. As the Rashba said it. The Ram quotes it. It's a typo. It says the Ramban. It's really the Rambam. He says it. So then, if it's a general din, so at first glance, it's impossible to assume that, you know, you can just close your eyes. We don't normally close our eyes to things. One of the issues is, again, I know you don't have the sources, the Marit says that your mom's a vada, the mom's a vada tells you you can be married to a bas, to a mamzeres and a kshera at the same time. Someone who's a suffix mamza. Yeah, can marry a mamzeres and a kshera at the same time. But mamanashach, which one is he? No, that's exeres akosif. He falls between the cracks. Mamza vala, mamza sava. So writes the Marit. Right? So, parshat pshat, that has to be a unique din by mamza. Would you say that in Kol HaTorah Kula? Doesn't sound right. So the Rambam says something similar about it. I don't have a Psua Daka. I know because he's Psua Bia. The Psua Daka can be, again, solving Psua Daka, married to two people at the same time. Manashach, the same, Rambam's exact same idea that the Rambam seems to say that applies there as well. And of course, we can understand it, because although the Gemara does say in Masechet Kiddushin on that same daf, after it says Mamzer Vadeh L'Mamzer Safek, so the Gemara says, but the rabbis prohibited it. Why? Mala also biyuchsin. So he has a kash against the Rambam. If the Rambam is right, what do you mean mala also biyuchsin? Every area of halacha, sveka the rice is l'chumah b'derabbanan. What's mala also biyuchsin? I can't go into the prot. This is what the Rabbanim are talking about. We should dole up on HaKadmonim. This is kash. Oh. But I'm just going to my chiddush is as follows. The pshat in the Rambam is not clear. I think the best pshat of all is the pshat of the Chavos Das in Beis HaSafek, end of your day, Siman Kuf Yud, basically more Masechet Sota. He tells us the Torah speaks in certainties. Certainties. So, based on the Gemara there, if it's a if it's a prohibition, only if it's a certain prohibition. If it's, on the contrary, a mitzvah's essay, if to do something, only if it's certainly okay. The Torah speaks in certainties. The Torah doesn't speak in uncertainties. That's what the Chavos Das says. I think that's the best shot in the Rambam. If that's true, one can argue that even though you're doing two contradictory things at the same time, it's both mutter, but not only if it's unique by mamzer, but it can be true if it's, as the Rambam says in the Tshuva, true by all Yisurim. Because the Torah speaks in terms of certainties and not in terms of doubts. So a doubtful case can be mutter on both ends, even if it's a general din. That's my understanding. And that's why I understood the Rambam and not Tshuva. And that Tshuva says, mamzer is a paradigm for all lav and Shem Torah. Flush the Rambam in the Tshuva. So we're all lav and Shem Torah. So some of want to claim, he only said it when it comes to lav, not when it comes to chiyuv kores, Hashem Toli. That's probably wrong. If you look at the Frank Rambam in Hilchos Tumas Meis, no, he holds even by chorus. He says Shabbos, Arayas. Some want to say it means Tchumin and Shnia. Very difficult. The answer is, he meant lav as opposed to esed. The Chavos Das. Lav and Shem Torah is vaday in below salve, but if you want to fulfill an essay with that, that's my interpretation. I went a little bit too far afield, perhaps. But this is the issue which has to be confronted in each and every turn. Do you turn over the rock? Do you not turn over the rock? Do you let it be? Do you not let it be? When in doubt, shave al tas odif. Don't ruin it for a person or for a whole family. You may be doing things which are very dangerous. Okay, and in many cases, Gedolei Rabbanim said. So again, you don't have the Beis Shmuel's and the Chagos Mechoikiks. You'll look it up and forget it. There's a problem. There's a very serious problem. And frankly, I was very hesitant. I think I told you my story last week about the... did I tell you my story last week? About the... someone who was Jewish, wasn't from, and I was asked to be involved in a gerus. And she was pregnant. I didn't tell you that story. I'll tell you the story. Okay. I tell some stories, and I'm trying to cut my stories now, but this story I'll tell you. This goes back 20 years ago. 20 years ago. I'm not a Geirus Rav. I never got involved in Geirus. But B'malkam Shein Anoshim, since they set up the GPS, how many years is that going? How many?
10.
10, close to 10 years. I've been much too involved, but I can't help it. It's not honest. But before that, I would probably count on my fingers how many did I before that started. There were other rabbis out there. Get a call from one of our Rosh Hashivas. Tells me he has this couple living in Soho, and he's Jewish and she's not, and she's pregnant, and she wants to convert before the baby is born. I said, are you kidding? He's not from what kind of... No, she's sincere. So they came to meet me. And she really wasn't. The rabbi vouched for her. This Rosh Hashiva vouched for her. Two aid, the rabbi and the Rosh Hashiva. Okay, good. So she's pregnant. I said, okay, I'm willing to do the conversion. You have to do the way, you have to get married the same day. This Pasha is no didn't have havchana in this kind of case. We're going to have havchana. We know exactly what the story is. She's pregnant. Right? So we assume that some say a little plug in this case. We don't accept that. Fine. Maybe she should have havchana too. I don't know if it's in the Marmal Kermis. I forgot already. It's in there. It should be in there somewhere. Anyway, so again, I asked him the standard questions. His name was Mickey. I said, Mickey, any conversions, adoptions, divorces in your family? He says, no. She says to him, Mickey, that's not true. This frum gay was candidate. And it turns out that his grandmother had been married before World War I, and then she came from the countryside to the city, and then she married somebody else, and then this is he's the grandson. I said, this is a red flag to me. Because you see, if you know the history of the Jews for that period of time, when they were still in the countryside, many of them were still at least nominally observant, and the Rabbanim, from Rabbanim, were in charge of what's going on. Once they moved to the city, they became Bohemians and lost connection to anything. I was very much afraid of this. It was a Mamzer's case. So I said, I can't do this wedding. I can't do it. I'm afraid. So we started putting people on the case. Maybe I'm out of my mind. What am I doing over here? He's living in sin right now. Someone went to me to Rabbi Yashiv indirectly. He said, do the wedding. You're living in sin. I said, will the child be mine? We'll worry about that later. I said, I can't be married with Mamzer and be Israel, even though Rabbi Yashiv is going to Ladar. I'm not doing the wedding. This Rosh Yeshiva has an uncle who's from the Gedolei Hadar and Dayanus in Eretz Yisrael, and my office was still in that building before I went to that building, not to this building, so it has to be quite a number of years ago. And I got on the phone with him. I said, come on. I said, are you willing to write me a letter? So he said, no. I'm not doing it. The nephew, the Rosh Yeshiva, pushed him. You write me a letter? Good. I'm not going to wait till I get the letter. Today, I told him, come today, we'll do the gerus, we'll do the wedding. I can't come today. P.S. The next day the baby was born. That's how the story is. An interesting story. So he had to come later and do a gerus on her, and the gerus on the baby, and a wedding all on the same day. So what's the word over here? So the bottom line of the Chelkas Mechokek and the Beis Shmuel, and that is a new edition, I don't think I have it here, called the Rosh Pina edition, which is they have in the Mechon Yerushalayim. They explain what's going on. The bottom line, this is always a judgment call. What was I afraid about? I was afraid that somehow it would come to light that there's a Mamzeres issue over here. If you as the Rav can be fairly certain that it'll never come to light, there's room to be lenient. Based on Mishpocha Shenitmo Nitmo, based on Mamzer Vadev or Mamzer Sofek, whichever way you want to slice that, the interaction between those two concepts. But if you're afraid it's going to come to light, you're not doing anyone any favors. You're going to let them get married, and then they're going to get married, have kids, and then 5 years from now, someone's going to walk in with a piece of paper which is going to prove definitively that there was a wedding without a get, and they're in trouble. So that the Beis Shmuel and the Chalak Mechol, what the Rosh Pina talk about, that the reason you can be Mekel is because you're not allowed to give testimony. Because an aid is not supposed to walk in. If there are two aidim, the two aidim know, it's one story. But most kids, they're not two aidim over here, it's just one guy or the room, but you're not allowed to come to Bezin. So we can assume, so you're not allowed to come to Bezin, no one's going to come to Bezin, and therefore it's going to be unknown until Mashiach comes, and the old not going to be Megala. And that's according to some, the basis of this idea of Nitma Nitma, or Vali Philosophy, and you can do the wedding. So that's always going to be a judgment call. Always going to be a judgment call. Is there a chance, a significant chance, that's going to come to light going out? And remember, as the years go on, it becomes less and less likely. So, you know, this case, I guess, was after the Holocaust story. I've been talking about in the 21st century, you know, 60 years later, something like that. So I guess Rav Zalman Nechemia felt, if you don't turn the rock over now, it's going to be forgotten until the Mashiach comes, and just let it go. Because the alternative is horrific. All right? So these cases will require, I don't expect any of you to make these decisions. You have to go to a higher authority for these kinds of decisions. But it's important they get just a general idea of what's going on over here. So I'm just talking, I would have given more by Ian if you had the source. I'm just giving you a bit of an overview of some of these issues which have to be dealt with. Have any questions? Yes.
If you can't find a tzad to be makir, to say the mamzer is not a mamzer, so what do we do with it? Can you tell
them
to get married?
So you know, in the olden days, he might have I mean, you can marry a Gioris, but then the children are tainted with Mamzeris. Did I speak about it last time? Did I speak about the Shifcha? Did I mention that? Did I mention that? No? Yichol Mamzer Li Torah is a Mishnah. The Mishnah, right? It's not some kind of reform rabbi. No. His name was Rabbi Tarfon. He was not reform. He was strictly Orthodox. So what's Pshat? Mamzer will marry a Shifcha. And this way, the child is a Eved of Shifcha. Okay, and then even Meshachah them later on, that's going to be fine and dandy. Story has that Rav Moshe approved of this situation. In other words, like this, a Mamzer can marry a Gioris. He finds a very fine lady in the middle of the Gioris process. Now, a Gioris has trouble finding a Shidduch. Everyone knows that, unless she converted for the sake of the Shidduch, which is another, we spoke about that last week. But otherwise, hard. So I have an offer you can't refuse. Tell this to Gioris. Do it in stages. First, take upon yourself the status of a shivch. Chayev mitzvahs. Right? We say every day, shaloh asaniyavim, because they're chayev in less mitzvahs than we are. That's what the Tosefta explains. And then, you'll marry this guy. He wants to marry you, because he's a mamzer. Mamzer's mutter b'shivcha. And then, you'll have kids. Gavaldik. And then, in 20 years, when you finish having your kids, you'll complete the conversion process. You'll have kosher kids, they'll convert, and you'll finish the conversion. And it's a movie happy ending, happily ever after. Story, the rumor is that Rav Moshe proved that. And the story is that my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, this is ridiculous. They can't be a servant. It was outlawed by the Abraham Lincoln and the amendments after the Civil War. You can't do that. There's one country in the world, I'm told, where we're still going to have slavery. Anyone know? I'm told there's one country in the world. Sudan. Kach shamati. If you go to Sudan, and then maybe there you can have such an arrangement. Whatever it is. But failing that, what are you going to do? So there is another amazing chiddush Rav Moshe. Unbelievable chiddush. Rav Moshe paskins that not only in the case of artificial insemination, where a couple are unable to have children and they just choose to have a donor sperm and the woman is married and the donor is Jewish, Rav Moshe passing the child is kosher. Probably achnosi achosi, you have to get around it with certain ways of identification. The Satmar Rebbe said the child's a mamzer. That was a whole fight, that was a tremendous fight many years ago. Rav Moshe goes a step further than that. Not only is a child born for artificial insemination from a Jewish donor and an Ashish of somebody else not a mamzer, because there's no Bias Yisr. But even if, listen carefully now, even if you have a situation where the zera of a mamzer is used to impregnate a woman, still the child is not a mamzer. Basically, a complicated cheshbon. If that's the case, one can make the following suggestion. Okay, let the mamzer marry a gioris, and then make sure that they have children only with artificial insemination. According to Rav Moshe, it works. There's a tshuva written since then that Rav Moshe's psak is wrong. It's all based on Akasha, on the Torah of the Kiddush of Dalit. Zera Apostle Minayim. All Sugas of Gemara. So there's a whole discussion over here. I guess it's a the tshuva was written to my former principal in RJJ High School, Rabbi Kagan, big time at Chacham, lived on the Lower East Side. And it has to do with the Kasha of Nizra Bambati. Why isn't Nizra Bambati put into this mix over here? Kiddush Avdalah and Tosfos. And Rabbi Moshe, the reason why not? Because Nizra Bambati from a mamzer would be kosher. It's all based on this is his hechrich. Then he gives a lumdus why it should be true. And later they wrote that the hechrich is no hechrich. It's a far out case. That's why they didn't give it. And the lumdus not. Also, that's the oiska halten. So they don't necessarily accept that way out. But Rav Moshe does have a tshuva. That would be a theory of possibility. In theory. Okay. But I got sidetracked. I was trying to say something else. Mm-hmm. Where was I before the Easter? Forgot. Okay, so let's just try to get back to the topic at hand. So we said before that Mamzeris cases are very difficult to deal with. We try our best to avoid Mamzeris at all costs. Now we have unbelievable. So we have cases now we deal with that seem to be obvious Mamzeris cases. There was an Orthodox wedding and a no get, and a child is born. There's a new way to be matter these things. Rabbi Yosef has it in his tshuvas, Rabbi Osher Weiss has it in his tshuvas. It's mind-boggling. It's based on, you can look up the sources. All right, so she was divorced, she left this fellow without a get. Great. And now she moved in with some other guy who's Jewish and had a child. Who said this is child? Who says it's child? The Gemara says, Mesech Yevamos, Akum ve'eved abal bas Yisrael, havlat kosher, afilu eshesish. Maybe a goy is the father. A goy is the father. Come on. She went with this other guy. He's Jewish. Who says he's the father? Maybe a goy is the father. So they take a Gemara Mesech to Ksubis, and after Yudal, I think the Gemara says, Trey Ruby. In that case, the Trey Ruby are in order to make somebody kosher, to assume that the father is not a goy, in order to be matal the kahuna, all kinds of things. If there are two roves, the rove of the city and the rove of the siya, the people passing through, or the community, then we can assume that the child is a kosher child based on the two majorities that the father is not a nochri. Here they turn it around. Trey Ruby, that the father is a Nachri. And therefore they're going to make this somewhat implausible claim that the reason why the child is kosher is because the father, we're assuming, is a Nachri. She moved out from her husband without a get, she moved in with this Jewish guy. Yeah, okay. The principle of Rov Bila Sachar Abal. That's if they're really married. They're not really married. Obviously, by not marriage, she's married to somebody else. So it's basically znus. So once she's mezana with this guy, maybe she's mezana with the goyish people too. It's a very bold halachic statement. As one of the rabbis of Israel said, if that's the case, it's almost impossible to find a mamzer in America because of these considerations. And I have difficulty relying upon this. Many of the cases that we sent there to Israel, I'm trying to rely upon the fact that the marriage was no marriage in the first place. It was done by a rabbi, it wasn't reliable, there were no edim. And they say, nah, you can't rely on that. Rely on this, that the father's a goy. Okay, have it your way. If the ones that matter it, I'm not standing in their way. But it is certainly a significant stretch. Now the clock has almost run out. I haven't even started what I wanted to talk about, which is Shidduch. What must be revealed with respect to Shidduch. So the first source is a Gemara Masechta Yevamos. When Yevamos Tafanim Hei tells the following story, there was a man whose father was a goy and his mother was Jewish, and no one wanted to make a Shidduch with him. Who wants a Mechut and a goy? So he told him, go into Golis, go to a faraway land, and the faraway land, you'll be able to find the Shidduch. So the stipula, and Kilos Yaakov and Yevamos says, Akasha, what? Number one, it's Gneva style, you're fooling. You're withholding information. Can you do this with a house, with a car? You withhold such a sale piece of information that just and not reveal it? Gneva style, that's wrong. And number two, this should maybe even be an argument of Kiddush Etos. She married him, she had no idea that he was, that his father was a goy. What? That's what the disciple says. He gives an unbelievable answer. He says, you cannot extrapolate from a mekach tos, a house or a car, to a kiddushet tos of a man and a woman. For a very simple reason. He says, if you buy a car, you'll buy Ford. Ford, they still sell Fords. You buy a Ford car. Good. And there's some blemish in this Ford car. And you say, whoa, mekach tos. You know why? Because there are a million Ford cars. probably a few hundred thousand of this particular model. So I could buy the same exact model, the same exact thing, without this blemish. He's gave me a blemished item. It's mekachtos, even if it's not just important blemish. Same with the house. But when it comes to a shidduch, he'll say, oh, if I knew that, no way. Just imagine, could I make it the following scenario? A couple, you know, they date, kalocha, it's fine, they get married. And they come to the house, and the fellow, or the girl, either one, takes off their shoes, and it turns out there's a big pimple on the big toe or some of that, that's a birthmark or some of that. Oy vey, I didn't notice. Kiddushet toes. Well, you would have found someone, all the miles of the person, they didn't have that pimple on the big toe. You can't find such a person in the world. Hence, the stipler writes, the fact that his father's a goy is not a big enough blemish to render a kiddushet toes, and not a big enough blemish to say you have to reveal it, otherwise considered gneivas das. Oh no. So then the question becomes, so what is the criterion? How high is the bar? So the disciple addresses that question too. You know what he says? He says, the blemish has to be so serious that if a person found out about it after the marriage, as soon as he found out, he'd exercise his option or her option of becoming divorced. I don't think anybody in his right mind would want to get divorced. He didn't tell about this big toe. There's a pimple in the big toe. I think we all agree that that would not be a reason for anyone to want to get divorced. So you're not required to reveal it. So how? Okay. He's assuming that somebody finds out that the father's a goy, that you also wouldn't want to reveal it. You wouldn't want to get divorced if you find it out afterwards. I once dealt with a case where it was an adopted child. They were told by Rabbonim, you're not required to say that the child is adopted. You're not required to say that maybe the father was a guy. I don't remember the exact details. You're not required to say. Good. They got engaged, and somebody blew the whistle. You know, this guy is adopted. And you know, check it out. So, but they're already engaged. So they went to a very, very distinguished Rav. And the Rav told the girl, and said, listen, he's a good guy. He's a fine guy. He's a Shiva Bach, blah, blah, blah. Go through with it. And they did. And then they're happily ever after. But had they known this at the beginning, they likely never would have happened. So maybe the psak was right in that kind of a case. The psak was dealing with the case of a certain physical blemish in the man. And he says, maybe it's a halachic issue even, and a physical issue. And he says, you're not required to reveal it. That's the actual shayla that the stipler had dealt with, amazingly. So how far do you go with this? How far do you go? So I had a case where there was a girl, and she was on some anxiety pills. So I always talked to my psychiatrist. I said, how serious is this? It's nothing, he says. So I say, a compromise. Don't reveal at the beginning. Reveal it, I always call it the halfway point. I always say, joke, it's like a radioactive half-life. What's the halfway point in the shidduch? Depends in large measure what kind of community you're coming from. I guess in certain Hasidic circles, the second date may be already the halfway point, and then in other communities, it's not just 2 dates, it's 2 weeks. Other days, it's 2 months. You know, whatever it may happen to be on average, fine. Once I had a case of a sort of yeshivisha, and I told after a month, you know, to tell the guy that she has anxiety pills. So she told his mother that they dropped it, and the mother calls me up irate. You wasted a month of my son's life, and he got emotionally involved. That was the whole point. Okay, but, so she gave me a what for. This is what I answered her. There's a tshuva nigras mash, another tshuva nigras mash. A woman who's marriageable age, 20 years old, never had a period. Zero. What do you do? So Rav Moshe says, you're not required to tell him. You're not required to tell him. Maybe you have to get married and she's with a man that's going to cause a period to come. No scientist I ever spoke to ever thought there was any truth to that. And you know what? Give me your word, make an agreement in advance. And in case they go for a foo, it's for 3 years. and all the refuahs fail, and the husband is not going to want to stay because he can't have children, no period, nothing's doing, that she'll accept the get without any problem, so that the man hasn't lost all that much. I like to say it as follows. He was the best bacher in Lakewood, age 22, as a 26-year-old divorcee. Hasn't lost all that much. I wouldn't pass that Moshe. I wouldn't. But I'm giving you an idea of how far Moshe wants to go, because how is she going to get married? So I told this lady, your son went out for a month because she had some anxiety pills, so you're coming to me with a taina. This is where Moshe wrote. Print the tshuva, look it up. So I got her off my back. So, but there are cases of more significant mental issues which are not revealed, which is a churban. Rabbi Dr. A.J. Twersky Shalita wrote about it more than once. You have to be candid. You don't have to say it before the first date. Now, some of it's going to be obvious. The first date, she weighs 300 pounds. So you don't say anything, and there are no pictures. And you want to kill the shatra. Right? You didn't tell me this, right? It's going to be obvious the first date. So what's the point in then putting them together? These might as well say to everybody. But things are not obvious, and you don't want everybody to know. You can't spill every chesaron at the very beginning. Odd case, diabetes. Diabetes. It's a serious business, diabetes. It's not a small thing. Right? There are issues with it. You have to take shots. And the life expectancy in a big adult is not as long as the average individual, though you can live very long if you're properly regulated, etc., etc. So I told the same thing. Halfway point. At the halfway point, the case I dealt with, they told the girl, and the girl said, okay, I'm willing to mekabel it. They did a due diligence, and they got married, and fine. So I'll end. I'm out of time. I always seem to go past the time. I'm sorry, but just a few minutes. The following sadder story. Talmud Amar was engaged many years ago, many, and he says, Rebbe, I have a problem. What's that? I just found out now that the young lady has something which is called Marfan syndrome. Who in this room heard of Marfan syndrome? Raise your hand. Only two people, three people. Okay. I think they say Abe Lincoln had it. That's like Zuckman. I don't know how much she would have lived longer anyway, given, but whatever, not to speculate. But you're gaunt, tall and gaunt, and the big, big sakana is that the aorta is going to blow. And it's just about impossible to fix. Even with all modern medicine today, it's kimat. I don't want to see. You never know what's going to. Good. He tells me that this just. I said, I don't know what it means. Go look it up. This guy was a pre-med. Went to Johns Hopkins, which was apparently the primary center in the country. He said, talking about a long time ago, 30 years ago. And he looks at Rebbe. I just don't think I can go through with it. I said to him, listen, I can't tell you what to do, but if you can't, you can't. Good. He breaks it up. I get a call from the mother, screaming at me, yelling at me. What happened was, I wasn't there. They probably, he came to break it up, they gave him over the head, and he mentioned my name. You know, that's there. It was right to mention my name. I did speak to him. But maybe it came out as if I told him to break it up, which I didn't. I lifted it up to him. I said, if you feel you have to break it up. Good. So I come to the house. They call. Yeah. I said, let me come to visit you. I went to get Petch. Really? I knew they were going to yell at me. But remember, I'm dealing with somebody. I actually knew the family. That the father had passed away in his 50s from this. I didn't know what it was. People died. I don't know. Obviously, I realized afterwards what it was. And I'm dealing with the Yosoman and Almona. You deal with Yosoman and Almona. You have to be very, very careful. So I went there and they. She tells the following story. When she daughter was older for Shidduchim, they knew the problem. They went to the local rabbi. This is beyond me. Go to Rabbi Soloveitchik. Got on the plane, went to Boston, spoke to the Rav, and the Rav heard and said, you don't tell anybody. Good. So they got engaged and she didn't tell anybody. Shock from the Rav. She told her she couldn't sleep at night. She couldn't sleep at night. I think the woman had very good instincts. She couldn't sleep at night. So she told him. She says to me, I was so nice and I told him, and look what he did. I said to him in the nicest possible way, you told them so you can make an informed decision. Okay, so you say it's a happiness. So he married someone else, she married someone else. But I found out not long ago that unfortunately she's no longer amongst the living. And not only her, but another member of the family. Shem Yirach. So, you know, it's very sad, but something which is serious, you have to have a disclosure. You don't have to be at the very beginning. You can do it, you know, at a halfway point. Yes, sir.
A very common situation is now, because people are aware that not everybody reveals things and they're going to wait till later on, they ask friends and relatives, do you know about any mental illness in the family?
Right.
So can you want to give the other person the opportunity to tell them on their own at the proper time.
Right.
But now they're asking you directly. So as a reference, can you...
Here's the answer. To tell a lie is very difficult. To tell a lie, how can you... Emes. It's true that once a couple is married, having a fight, then you're allowed to tell a lie. That's the Mefurash Gemara. It's a mitzvah to tell a lie. You're Aaron HaKohen. He's going to make shalom. You tell lies. You know, we just had it written in the Chumash. Avadoni Zakev, and he's a Kanti. Kodesh Baruch Kaviyachal, you know, is saying differently to keep a shalom bias going. Right. But they should start off on that base with a lie. I find it very difficult to tell a lie. On the other hand, to tell the truth, you're not allowed to tell the truth. Because every single one of those courses, so we're going to get out to the whole world about this problem. So you have to fumfa. You have to be evasive. You know, someone who's sharp will pick it up and they'll walk away. And someone who doesn't really care that much will not walk away. I've had it in the case of BRCA. You know what BRCA is? Everyone knows what BRCA is. So, you know, what do you know? I didn't answer the question, basically. And the woman who probably figured it out, walked away. And meanwhile, someone else got married and no one asked any questions, and I hope they either the daughter doesn't have it or they'll fix it or they'll do whatever they do. So maybe next week I'll be less forgetful. It's only 1 week gap. I'll start to talk about that as well. And as a matter of fact, if you give me email me the Maram HaKamas, I don't know if I put that on. I forgot. Is the Chavos Chaim on? Maybe so I said next one, so maybe we're up to the next one already. I don't remember anymore. And Boss says this course is not so well outlined, so forgive me for being a little bit vague, but we'll get it right one of these days. Okay. Shkoyach, we hope you have mincha now. Here's a little bit. What's Braka? It's a reference to the